The ephemeris is a book currently stored in the National Library of Ireland. This is a facsimile of the pages from the Cadogan Library, which is impressive, Theo added, with a smile for my father. What kind of book? My mother asked, leaning forward. A fairy almanac, Theo said. The information ranges from the basic, building charms, coordinating magic with phases of the moon, understanding natural signs, to the complex. He flipped through the pages to a sheet with a simple drawing of what looked like rivers winding through a forest. We don't have any experts in the language of fairies in-house other than Claudia, and she's unconscious again. But this appears to be an explanation of ley lines and how to use them. There are a lot of steps, Petra said. Charms and steps and procedures. Anything about the Greenland? Yoon asked. Not that we can tell without a full translation, Theo said. Ruadan must have figured that out on his own. Or he could have been pulling information from Claudia incrementally, I said quietly, waiting for his moment. And when she didn't do what Ruadan wanted at the peace talks, Theo said, he decided the fairies needed a different approach. I don't know if all the other fairies agree with him, but he has at least some allies, I said with a nod. The fairy who killed Tomas, the fairies who got Claudia into the vehicles and guarded her at the church, the fairies who supported him at the castle and Grant Park. To summarize, Theo said, counting on his fingers, Ruadan learned how to manipulate ley lines and tossed away his queen, and is trying to use those ley lines to tug the Greenland into this world. He hasn't yet nailed the process, or what he believes the process to be, and his failures and successes are dangerous to the rest of us. He looked up. What do we do about it? At that, the room went silent. Can we bomb it? Petra asked. We all looked at her. I'm not being bloodthirsty, she said in her slightly kooky, matter-of-fact way. Okay, maybe a little bloodthirsty, although I think that's appropriate and deserved right now. Is there some way we can bomb the Greenland and not have it affect Chicago? This is outside my expertise, Yoon said. But if the Greenland and the missing parts of Chicago are still linked by the bubble, so to speak, I would think an explosion would affect both. Could we take out the fairies working the magic? Theo asked. I think that presents the same problem, Petra said. You take them out while the magic is in play, and you risk making things worse. Sealing off the bubble, putting the Greenland here permanently. So, what do we do? I asked. Silence fell again. After a moment, Yoon looked at my father. I believe there was some mention of a library. It was my mother's favorite room in the house, the two-story library where Cadogan's collection of vampire law books, magical history, and modern fiction was stored. The first floor had long rows of books and space for library tables, where I knew my parents had plotted some of their escapades. A wrought-iron balcony made up the second floor, where more books were stored. A face, handsome and topped by a messy thatch of dark hair, popped out from an aisle, gave me a narrow-eyed stare. No food, no beverages. The library was picky about his books. We don't have any food or beverages. He gave us a head-to-toe looking over. Good, he said, then winked at me. Nice to see you, Elisa. Then he disappeared back into the stacks. I looked back at Petra, who stared open-mouthed at the room. Reference books about sups are over there, I said, pointing to the several rows in the first floor's back corner. So grab a table and get to reading, and let's figure out how to stop these people. They nodded, and Petra wandered into the books with huge, glazed eyes. I always end up in Ravenclaw, I murmured, and headed in. 2 hours later, Theo was working with Yoon on the relocation, Petro was back at the ombudsman's office, and I needed a break. I pushed back the stack of books and scrubbed my hands over my eyes. I'd worked through 2 dozen books, learned about wee folk, hidden people, fairy courts, and fairy hills. I'd read about the fairies' expulsion from Europe, mostly in response to fairies using their cunning to fool unsuspecting humans, to lure them into thorny woods, seduce away their secrets, or switch a healthy human child for the sick child of a fairy. Unfortunately, none of it had helped me come up with a plan to reverse what was happening now. I was tired, physically and emotionally. I'd fought a literal battle tonight, and my energy was gone. I needed blood and sleep, and I didn't want to leave Lulu unprotected in case the Greenlands spread farther north and west. So I said my goodbyes, agreed to meet the ombudsman at their office at dusk, and took an auto back to the loft, stopping for blood along the way. I found Lulu asleep on the couch, Eleanor of Aquitaine curled at her feet. The cat opened a single eye as I passed, closed it again quickly enough. I assumed that meant I wasn't enough of an enemy now to merit a full growl, which I considered an improvement. I walked to my spare room, found a coloring book featuring a pretty pink fairy with her hair in a bun, her wings shimmering with holographic stickers, propped on the pillow, topped by a paint-smeared sticky note. "Maybe this will help," it said. I snorted, pushed the coloring book aside, and fell into bed. 22. I'd slept through what I assumed was a day of horror, so I pulled out my screen as soon as the sun set again and checked the latest video feed. There was another Greenland bubble in Lincoln Park, and the 2 existing sites, United Center and Lakeshore Drive, were complete hills and valleys of green. Evacuation across the city was underway, humans streaming out of high-rises, carrying children and suitcases, purses and laptops, trying to escape before the ferry's wall of green overtook the rest of the city. And because the evacuees were mostly human, there was traffic, looting, and marching against supernaturals. Not that I could entirely blame them. I got dressed and walked into the loft, and there she was, Lulu Bell, whom I'd known since the day she was born, leaned against the island in a t-shirt, running shorts, and sneakers, and she was stretching out her calves. "What the hell is this?" She jerked and looked back. "Shit, I was hoping I'd beat you out the door. I thought we agreed running was only appropriate if someone was chasing you." She sighed dramatically. "It's probably time for a full confession. I've been running for 2 years now." I narrowed my gaze. "I've run 4 half marathons since you've been gone." "How dare you?" She grinned, adjusted the laces on one shoe. "I also own a skirt." "You monster!" "Running's not all bad, Lise," she said, and began to bounce from foot to warm up. "Just because your mother dragged you to a 5K once upon a time..." "It was 8 5Ks, and it was ridiculous." She winked at me. "I've run 12. I threw up my hands. Living together was going to be a test of our relationship. I grabbed a banana and a cup of coffee Lulu had left when she went for her run, and called an auto to the ombudsman's office. By the time I'd grabbed my katana and made it downstairs, the vehicle was waiting at the curb. I jumped in automatically, and it wasn't until I'd belted myself into the front passenger seat that I saw I wasn't alone. The fairy who'd killed Tomas, who I recognized from the surveillance video, sat in the usually empty driver's seat, checking the point of a lethal-looking dagger. My heart began to piston.
"He wishes to see you," the fairy said. "Resist, and you'll become intimately acquainted with my blade. I'm sure you know by now that I'm very good with it.
Before I could respond, a fairy outside the car grabbed my katana, and before I could launch myself after him, kicked the door closed. Then we were speeding away. The auto's screen showed the destination. We were headed back to the castle. The fairies must have figured I'd take a car this morning, and it hacked my system to give it a new destination. But I wasn't sure why. If Ruidon wanted to take me out, there were easier and faster ways to do it. I thought of the covetous look in his eyes, the consideration and interest, and a dark and heavy fear settled in my belly. Not even the monster could push through that. I had to ignore it, to ignore emotions, and think how to get out of this. I considered trying to force my way out of the car, trying to survive a rolling stop outside it. But assuming I could do that on crowded streets without killing myself or someone else, I'd still be weaponless in facing down fairies. Trying to free myself at the castle seemed like my best option. I knew the building relatively well now, and I'd hopefully be able to use that to my advantage. And given I was supposed to be at the Ombudsman's office, it seemed likely someone would eventually figure out I was gone. Until then, self-rescue, and hope that I wouldn't have to gnaw off an arm. The gate was open, the castle dark. The auto drove over the gravel path, even though it was too narrow for a vehicle, and came to a stop outside the gatehouse.
"Out," Tomas's murderer said, dagger pointed at me as another fairy opened the door and pulled me out. Three more, this time with a mix of guns and blades, waited.
He strode toward the building, and I followed, the rest of the fairies walking behind us with weapons pointed. I needed a weapon of my own. The gatehouse was dark and empty, but the doors into the courtyard were open and light streamed through, along with the prickle of fairy magic. Ruidon stood in the yard with several dozen fairies. This time, instead of the V formation they'd taken at Grant Park, they stood in a long, straight line that cut across the courtyard and probably traced the ley line that ran below it. They'd abandoned the castle because they thought they could bring the green land here from Grant Park, and when that hadn't worked, they'd come back to the castle to try again. Firelight from the torches they'd reinstalled shifted across their bodies as they waited to work their magic. They were in tunics, although, like the fairies outside, some had switched their blades and bows for guns. I guess they weren't so concerned about being authentic anymore.
"She's here," Tomas's murderer said as one of the fairies behind me pushed me forward.
Ruidon turned and looked at me, and the excitement in his eyes made my skin crawl. "Kidnapping is illegal," I said. "You have no right to hold me here."
"I don't think you'll want to walk away."
He walked forward, arrogance in his stride, and looked down at me, the scent of green decay lifting in the air with his movements.
"Trust me," I said. "I want to walk away." "Not when you learn of my plan. It was you who inspired it, after all."
That made the knot in my belly flip over.
"What?" "You see, Bloodletter, the magic is old and complex, and the ley lines are not strong enough. The river's not nearly deep enough to accomplish our goal.
To bring the Greenland here."
"To bring the Greenland alive," he corrected. "There is a finite supply of magic in the world. Fairies used to control much of it, but the world changed. Djinn, demons, vampires, shifters, goblins, even the elves who share some of our biology. More creatures, but no more magic, and we suffer because of it."
"You can't destroy Chicago because your magic has faded. That's not our fault." He spun around, and his eyes had gone to angry slits. "Then whose fault is it if not yours? Humans?" He gave a considering nod. "Maybe. So we take from them. And you toss aside your own queen?" His eyes flashed hot again. "She would rather we die than renew our kingdom." "You told her there was a vampire shifter conspiracy," I said. "Convinced her the peace talks were some kind of revolution. You're the reason she broke into the session."
"She should have fought then and there. We made it inside the room. You were outnumbered and outarmed. But your father spoke, and she lost her nerve, as she ever does."
"And Tomas, the vampire you killed at Cadogan House?" I shifted my gaze to the fairy who'd killed him. "You wanted to implicate the shifters to disrupt the process more?" Ruadan's smile was thin.
"Disruption is the first step toward revolution, and revolution, upsetting the current order, is the first step toward getting the power and recognition we deserve."
His smile fell away, replaced by a pouty look that would have been better suited to a teenager.
"Claudia believes magic and history have sealed our fate. We disagree, and sentimentality is not a weakness we share."
I thought I'd seen desire in Ruadan's eyes when he'd looked at Claudia. Maybe he was lying, or maybe it hadn't been romantic desire at all. Just want and need for something he thought she could provide. He moved closer, until his magic surrounded us both and I was forced to look up at him, and could see the shadows under his eyes and the fear that lived in them.
"I am too young to fade away, to become a shell of myself, a husk, so we put aside the obstacle to our resurrection. Your queen. She was wrong about this magic, but when we succeed, she will see that we were right, and she will celebrate it."
"Given you kidnapped her and stuck her in an abandoned church, I doubt that. She's not nearly as grateful as you seem to think she should be." His dark eyes flashed.
"She will thank us."
"For what? Your plan failed. Look around, Ruadan. We aren't in the Greenland, and she knows it." I tried to remember what Claudia had told us, what tampering with the Greenland would do. "Trying to bring the Greenland here will only screw up this world. She wanted us to convince you to stop." His eyes were mean.
"Lies fall from your lips, bloodletter. We haven't failed. We merely have not yet been successful."
He took a step forward, voice low and menacing.
"I saw what you were at Cadogan House, when our magic enhanced the natural bloodthirst of your kind. I saw the red of your eyes, the magic that flows through you. We cannot do this on our own, but we can do it with you."
Fear was a vice around my heart, a vicious, sharp-tipped hand. I didn't want Ruadan knowing anything about me, much less about the monster.
"You and I were born at the same time," he continued. "We were brought here by the same magic, the power that Sorcha spread across the city. That power allowed fairies and vampires to breed again. You and I were born of that same power. That means you can help us."
For a moment, I simply stared at him, and then nearly laughed in relief. He'd gotten it wrong. Never mind that I'd been kidnapped, didn't have a weapon, and was completely outnumbered. The fact that he didn't know about the egregore, and only thought I was different because Sorcha had sprinkled around some pixie dust, loosened that knot in my belly. And I wasn't about to correct him. "You think ley lines aren't strong enough, but a 23-year-old vampire can help you?"
I think you don't give yourself enough credit.
I don't even know how to do that. How to access magic.
Oh, that won't be a problem, Ruadan said. We're going to do it for you. Put her in position, he ordered, and the fairies behind me prodded me forward again. Magic began to tingle as thin green vines began to curl between the stones ahead of us. They'd tie me again, and this time there'd be no wolf to cut me free. So it was now or never. I gasped, pretended to stumble forward. The fairy on my right stepped forward, reached for my arm. I grabbed his wrist, twisted it back, and reached for the knife belted at his waist.
Secure her!
Ruadan yelled, and the other two fairies moved forward, grabbing my arms and pinning them behind me before I could take the weapon. They pushed me forward toward the crawling vines on the stones, and I began to feel very pessimistic about my chances.
Begin!
Ruadan ordered, and the fairies held my arms wide while the tendrils curled into place around my left wrist. The ground began to ripple as they began their magic. Ruadan stepped in front of me and pressed his hand to my wrist.
Now,
he said, and the world became a blur. It was like bees had taken up space in my body, an entire hive vibrating and moving beneath my skin as Ruadan sought to pull from me the magic he believed I possessed. But he hadn't been right about the monster. He'd guessed wrong, and instead of convincing it to link its magic to theirs, he'd only made it angry. It climbed to the surface, claw over claw, and began to scream back its own vibration of magic. I squeezed my eyes shut, trying to drown out the roaring tornado of noise in my head, trying to keep from losing my sanity in the vortex. The monster flexed arm and muscle, and the tendrils at my right wrist snapped, and the magic fluttered in response.
Attention! Attention!
Was that Theo's voice on a loudspeaker?
You are surrounded. Release your hostage and proceed in an orderly fashion toward the gate. Do not stop, Ruadan said as the magic stuttered around us. Complete the charm.
Before they could respond, the ground shook, and this time it didn't have anything to do with magic. Stones crumbled through the lower part of the outer wall about 40 feet away, sending a ball of fire through the gap. Smoke began to pour into the courtyard, and chaos erupted. I tried to make myself focus despite the spinning in my head and punched out, caught the closest fairy beneath the chin. He hit the ground and I fell on top of him, trying to wrap my fingers around his knife. I began to saw at the vines on my other wrist, but my vision was double, and I struck the ground twice, sending shocks of pain through my arm, before managing to break through a single strand. Someone grabbed my arm and I swung back, struck out.
Elisa, it's me! It's Theo!
I stared at him, waiting for his face to come into focus.
Theo?
Yeah. Let's get the hell out of here, okay?
I blinked, nodded, offered him the knife.
Can you get this one? They magicked me, and I think my aim is off.
Sure,
he said, and sawed through the vines.
What was the noise?
I asked, opening and closing my eyes again until he had only a single head.
I sacrificed the auto parked outside.
They hacked my auto account.
Yep. You didn't show this morning, and we couldn't reach you. Lulu found your katana outside her apartment when she came back from a run, called me. And then Petra checked your account and learned they brought you here. She says she's sorry about the hacking, and you should change your password. But not until she makes sure you aren't charged for the entire car.
I will do that at the first opportunity. What's a little privacy violation between friends?
My thought, he said with a smile. We reported this to the CPD, but dispatch is overwhelmed because of Linkin Park
and the looting and the protests, but let's discuss that elsewhere.
We ran across the yard, fairies shouting behind us.
Doors, I said when we got into the gatehouse, and we grunted as we pushed them closed, then flipped the steel bar down to give us more time. Then we ran through the building to the outer wall, and I stared at the empty lawn.
Where's your car?
Outside the gate, Theo said as we took off down the stone path.
You couldn't park next to the door? I asked.
I didn't want to drive on their lawn. That seemed rude.
They kidnapped me.
We don't all have to be assholes.
We'd made it 20 feet when something whistled over us. We both covered our heads, then stared when an arrow pierced the grass in front of us, still quivering with energy. Another whistle, and a second arrow pierced the grass a few feet to our right.
Figures they've got damn arrows, Theo muttered. Let's haul ass.
We pushed harder, arms pumping as arrows whistled through the air like angry hornets. I was faster than Theo, and I was working up a nice lead when I heard the muffled scream of pain behind me. I looked back. Theo was on the ground, an arrow through his thigh, pinning him to the ground.
Oh, damn, I said and ran back, sidestepping another arrow that nearly tagged my calf.
Shit, Theo said as I went to my knees beside him.
Shit!
Yeah, you've got a little bit of a problem, I said and looked it over. The arrow had gone right through the middle of his thigh, spilling blood across the ground. Not enough, I thought, to have nicked his femoral artery, but enough to worry about. Blood scented the air like wine, and that was enough to silver my eyes.
Oh, damn, Theo said, his pupils enormous. Shock was going to be a concern if I didn't hurry.
You're not going to... bite you? I said with a grin, trying to keep the mood as light as possible.
No, it's just a reaction to the blood.
I fought to keep my fangs from descending, as I didn't want his heart pumping harder than it already was. The point was to keep the blood inside him, not on the ground, and not in me. An arrow whistled above us. I ignored it, made myself focus on the arrow that had already become a problem. The shaft was probably a quarter inch in diameter, and the diameter stayed the same from top to bottom. Based on the length of the other arrows around us, it embedded in the ground 4 or 5 inches. There wasn't going to be an easy way to do this. Not without pain, and not without risking further injury or keeping him in the open for longer than was safe.
Theo, I'm going to hold on to the arrow and lift your leg to raise the arrow out of the ground.
Sliding the arrow out of the dirt and threading it through his leg seemed like an injury risk, and while I might be able to snap the arrow in half, I didn't want to hurt him further.
As soon as you're free, I'm going to pick you up and carry you to the car and drive us the hell away from here.
He swallowed hard.
You're going to leave the arrow in my leg?
For now, yeah. I want someone more skilled to remove it. Someone trained in keeping the blood actually inside your body. My expertise is kind of the opposite.
Okay, he said with a forced smile.
Okay. I wiped my hands on my pants, smearing blood and dirt, then reached beneath his leg and gripped the arrow. I put the other hand beneath his knee, prepared to lift his leg straight up. I pulled, but my fingers slipped away, and I ended up slamming my hand into his leg.
Damn, he said through his teeth.
Oh, damn. I'm sorry, Theo. One more time, okay? For all the marbles. Brace yourself.
He sucked in a breath, readying himself for the pain, and I didn't make him wait. I gripped the arrow again. With Theo rigid and shaking beside me, I lifted his leg and managed to keep the arrow in place, removing it from the soil one slow inch at a time. A volley of arrows made a quick ring around us, a Stonehenge of armament.
Almost there,
I told Theo, ignoring the flash of an arrow in my peripheral vision. I grabbed his leg, the arrow, and pulled. He stifled a scream as he was freed. "Hold the arrow," I said, then climbed to my feet, pulled him up. "Put your arm around me," I said, putting an arm around him and trying to avoid jarring the arrow that still stuck sickeningly through his leg. "Lean on me," I said. "I'm bigger than you," he said, chin trembling as he fought against the pain. "I'm a vampire," I said as we hobbled across the yard toward his car. "But are you made of adamantium by chance?"
"No."
"Or possibly dark matter?"
"No,"
he said, the word falling to a grunt as he stumbled a little.
"I sure as hell would like to see the goddamn getaway car right now."
I thought I was losing him, that he was going loopy because of the blood loss, because there wasn't a single siren on the wind. Until the enormous black SUV burst through the open gate. It roared toward us, then spun to a stop with a spray of dirt and grass. And then Connor was throwing open the back door.
"About time," Theo muttered, and his head slumped against my shoulder.
"I'll get him," Connor said, casting a curious glance at the arrow, and then picking up Theo with a grunt and loading him into the back of the SUV. He closed the door just as an arrow buried itself in the door panel. Connor swore.
"Eli is not going to like that."
Another arrow flew overhead, but I couldn't stop staring. Or smiling. "What the hell are you doing here? You should be in, I don't know, Iowa by now."
"Good to see you too, Lise," Connor said, and his smile was as cocky as his tone. "Get in the vehicle."
"I called Connor too,"
Theo said in a sing-song voice from the back seat.
"And he rode to the rescue again. Really screwed up the lawn, though."
I called Yoon as Connor drove to the nearest hospital, explaining what had happened and arranging to meet him at Cadogan House when Theo was on the mend. We got Theo situated in the ER, which was full even in the middle of the night, and walked outside to get some air. And talk. Because we needed to talk. "I thought you were leaving," I said when we sat on a bench in a small garden area. Connor leaned forward, elbows on his knees.
"I was. And then Theo called, said you'd been taken to the castle. So I borrowed Eli's SUV, and there you go."
That this gorgeous man who'd had his pick of women for years seemed flustered in this moment made me relax. "I guess I owe you for the second rescue." He slid a glance my way.
"Maybe you do."
We looked at each other, years of memories and history and insults between us.
What is this?" I asked.
"I don't have the foggiest idea, brat."
He looked down at his linked fingers.
"Confusing?"
"Yeah," I said.
"But also, maybe..."
He trailed off, and then he turned to me again, and then his hand was on my cheek, pulling me closer, and his mouth was on mine, hard and hot and possessive. I am kissing Connor Keene. I tried not to think about that, tried not to think about anything, tried not to let rules or roles take me out of the moment. Instead, I put a hand against his chest, grabbed a handful of t-shirt, and pulled him toward me. He growled happily and deepened the kiss, slipping his tongue between my lips, wicked and teasing.
"Brat," he said against my mouth.
"Yes?"
My voice sounded husky, even to me, and I could feel his smile against mine.
"I've got to take care of something,"
Connor said. He pulled back and looked at me, and his eyes were swirling and stormy blue. He was almost unfairly gorgeous, like every line had been carefully and intentionally carved.
"You are beautiful," he said, then kissed me again, softer this time. "I have to get the vehicle back to Eli."
He stood and looked down at me.
"Take care of Theo, Lise. I'll see you."
I didn't have the courage to ask him when. 3 hours later, Theo hobbled on crutches, his leg thoroughly bandaged, into the waiting room.
"You really should stay overnight," said the doctor who followed him, and who looked barely older than me.
"Things to do," Theo said, swinging into the room. "It didn't hit anything vital, and you gave me some fluids, and I'm now at 100%. And she's a vampire. You don't let us go. She might give your blood bank an extra look."
The doctor gave me a skeptical look before sighing and heading back through swinging doors.
"Ready when you are," Theo said.
"There's an auto outside."
We walked outside, and I got him settled in the back seat. The auto was too small for his crutches, so the ends stuck through the open windows. But at least we were getting the hell out of the hospital.
"Why did you call Connor?" I asked Theo on the way back to Cadogan House.
"He was the only person I could reach."
"My parents?"
"Deal with the Ombudsman's office," he said. "Sending them to the castle to accost fairies seemed a little over the line, even for me. But they're so busy anyway, and the story had a happy ending."
He glanced at me.
"I take it he left for Alaska?"
"I'm not entirely sure." And I didn't like that I wasn't sure. But there was nothing to do about that now. Either way, probably better not mention that he helped us. At least until he talks to Gabriel or whatever.
"Not a problem. They tricked you, huh?"
"What?"
"The fairies.
They tricked you."
He yawned, dropped his head back on the seat.
"You didn't know they were in the car."
"Yeah, I guess they did."
And that had me thinking.
"Typical big fairy,"
Theo said, closing his eyes.
"Could you maybe keep it down a little? I'd like to rest a little bit."
I hadn't made a sound, but I didn't argue. I let him sleep, and I thought about fairy tricks, and whether they'd work in reverse. We were greeted at Cadogan House like heroes, or Theo was anyway, as my mother proceeded to ply him with food and drink. Lulu had dropped off my katana, and it felt good to belt it on again. Gabriel and Miranda waited with my parents in my father's office, and I felt a momentary pang that Connor wasn't with them. "He'll come back," I told myself. "He said he would, and he will." But he wasn't here yet, and I had to put that out of my mind.
"You don't need to thank me," Theo said. "Your daughter did the heavy lifting."
"Literally," I said. "And I owe you for showing up in the first place."
"The OMB owes you one,"
Yoon argued. I looked at him, nodded. I was enough of a Sullivan to accept a good offer.
"Okay, I'll take that on credit."
"Let's start with the fact that Riley will be released within the hour,"
Yoon said with a smile, and a little of the weight that had pressed down on my shoulders fell away. I closed my eyes in relief.
"The pin you found tested positive for Tomas's blood," Yoon said. "Adding that to the surveillance video from Cadogan House, the fairy's subsequent activities, and the remains of a bloody tunic found by the CPD in the castle's keep's main fireplace, the prosecutor became convinced she had the wrong man."
I opened my eyes again. "He burned the tunic in the castle?"
"He did,"
Yoon said with a smile that said he was less than impressed by the fairy's effort to conceal evidence.
"Most of the tunic was destroyed, but scraps of the fabric near the collar remained. They tested positive for blood, and there are visible holes from the pin."
My only regret was that I hadn't found it myself, since I'd walked right by that damn fireplace.
The fairies were gone when the CPD got to the castle, Yoon said. Presumably hiding in the Greenland again.
Ruidon wants to complete his plan, I said. And he hasn't been able to do that yet because the ley lines weren't strong enough. He kidnapped me because he thought I could provide the missing power.
Why?
My father asked. Because we were born around the same time, right after Sorcha, during the fairy renaissance. He thinks that makes me magically similar to the fairies, and that he could use that power to complete the switch. He started the magic but didn't finish it before Theo showed up. And he'll try again because he's convinced that's the only way fairies will survive. I hadn't told my parents the entire truth about me, but I'd been honest about what Ruidon had said. I decided that didn't make me entirely a liar.
In order to do that, Theo continued, they're going to have to show themselves again. Pop back into this world.
Yeah, I said. And when they do, I think we should take advantage of it.
How so? My father asked.
Fairies like to play tricks. They like cons and games because they think they're innately smarter, braver, and more talented than any other supernatural. I say we turn the tables against them. We trick them into believing we have something they need.
Which is? Yoon asked.
I smiled. A solution to their magical problem. We give them one. We give them Claudia. An hour later, after the idea had been talked and argued through, and Yoon had secured Dearborn's and the mayor's approval, my mother opened the door of my father's office to the fairy queen who stood in the hall. Her hair fell loose in waves over pink scrubs, and she was escorted by Delia on her left and Kelly on her right. The vampires in the room looked curious. The shifters still looked dubious. The humans looked amazed. Claudia tossed her head. She might have been physically and magically weak, but the woman knew how to get attention. Since she was in my father's house, he and Yoon had decided my father would take the lead. While the rest of us looked on, he stood with his hands in his pockets, wearing his coldest and, to my mind, scariest expression.
Claudia, my father said.
Blood letter. I am being held against my will. I wish to be released.
Excellent news, as we are here to offer you the terms for your release. Your protege has tried again to shift the Greenland to Chicago. Thus far, he's tried and failed, and, as a result, he has spread, shall we say, bubbles of your world around ours.
Theo, he prompted, and Theo sent images of the affected areas to the wall screen. Claudia's gaze flicked to the grasses that waved in the pockets of Chicago. Her eyes widened instantaneously.
He is no protege of mine.
But the lie showed clearly in her eyes. My father didn't comment on it.
Ruidon is destroying our world. He kidnapped my daughter this night in an effort to try it again. He was thwarted, and your castle was damaged in the process.
Her eyes flared.
He dare not.
Oh, he dared, my father said. And now he will be stopped. You can assist in that process, with a result that is beneficial to your interests, or we can do it without you.
Silence fell heavy, a curtain drawn forward, interrupted only by the tick of the clock on the other side of the room.
How do you propose to stop him? She finally asked.
You will send a message to Ruidon that you were captured by vampires and cruelly treated. You now see that he was correct, that the fairies must bring the Greenland here, whatever the cost. After studying the ephemeris yourself, stolen from the Cadogan Library,
You have identified the optimal location for the process. You will wait for him there, and you will work the magic together and rule as king and queen. Her eyes were hard. I am queen of the Fae. I rule with no man. Get it, girl, Petra muttered. You don't have to rule with him, my father said coolly. You only need tell him that you will. The humans will arrest him and his allies. You will be returned to your castle to live in peace with the fairies who chose not to join him. I owe you no boon. My daughter was kidnapped by one of your people, my father reminded her. A boon is owed, as you will recognize. But moreover, my father moved closer, and there was no mistaking the cold anger glinting in his eyes. You will help stop Ruadon, or you will lose what's left of your people and your kingdom. You help us, and you will regain them, and we will deliver him to you to be punished as you wish.
Yun hadn't been thrilled about that part of the plan, but he knew my father would need room to negotiate. Claudia walked to my father's desk, ran a fingertip across a chunk of quartz that held down papers.
And what do you seek in return for delivering him to me? You will reverse the damage he's done. I could tell you that's impossible. You're a powerful queen, he said. That would be a lie.
She lifted her gaze to him again.
I could betray you. You could, but you won't. You may not like or respect us, but you hate him more. He has sought to depose you, to harm your subjects, to ruin your castle, to destroy your world, to harm what you have built here. You have no love of Ruadon.
A pause.
They will be suspicious.
She looked at me.
You told him that I believed he was wrong, that he would harm this world.
I glanced at Yun, my father, got their nods before answering, and when I did, said,
Yes, but he didn't believe me, and I think you could convince him pretty easily that I was lying to drive a wedge between you, that you weren't sure it could be done, but the ephemeris changed your mind.
You are their queen. My father said, the words a challenge. Make them believe.
Claudia walked back to him, and my mother moved a hand to her katana, just in case.
Your blade is not needed,
Claudia said, without looking at her. She looked down at her scrubs.
But I need garments befitting royalty. Something that will inspire him.
That, my father said with a slow smile, can be arranged. 23. Claudia was escorted back to her room, and we got to work on the details.
We need a location, Yun said. We need to ensure that area is evacuated. We need CPD personnel in place to capture the fairies, and transportation to get them to the facility.
Faster to just kill them all, Miranda muttered.
Mass murder isn't the most diplomatic solution, Gabriel said.
We have time, I said, because this is our con.
And I think I have a place.
We all looked at Theo.
Lakeshore East Park, he said,
gaze on the monitor. He'd pulled up a satellite image of downtown Chicago that showed the small park north of the river and just west of Lake Michigan. Walkways swept through a rectangle of grass in dramatic arcs. There was a playground near the lake end and a water feature that moved downhill toward it. The walkways were lined with trees and shrubs, as were the outer edges of the park.
It's over the north-south ley line. It's a manageable area, and it's bounded by buildings. But it's also near Lakeshore Drive, so most of the humans have already been evacuated. We've got the lake nearby if we need to make a quick escape.
And it's fancy.
It's fancy? My father asked. Theo lifted his shoulder.
It's a nice park. A modern park. It looks like the kind of place Ruidon would want to take a stand.
Now that you mention it, my father said, nodding his agreement. Yoon was already working on his screen.
I'll contact Dearborn. Then we'll work on getting everything else in place.
I'll help. We looked back. The Prince of Wolves stood in the doorway in jeans and a t-shirt, leather motorcycle jacket over it. Helmet in hand, Connor strode toward us, but kept his gaze on me. The look in his eyes was like lightning, and it sent a bolt of heat through my body and a frisson of magic into the room. That magic was matched by Miranda's rage. She strode forward and grabbed his arm with painted fingers, fury radiating in her wake.
What the hell are you doing here? You were supposed to leave hours ago. You have responsibilities.
Connor's expression went hard, his gaze very cool.
I'm well aware of my responsibilities, Miranda, and you're going to want to remove your hand. As much as you might want to be, you aren't apex of this pack.
Her eyes fired, but she pulled back her hand.
Neither are you.
I'm aware of that, too.
He looked back at his father, his competitor.
If the pack determines they don't want me, that will be their decision to make. But I'll be damned if I'll run away now.
Miranda pressed on.
So you're abdicating your responsibility to lead them to Alaska?
No. I'm taking on the responsibility of leading them here. There's a battle to be fought on the road, and there's a battle to be fought in Chicago.
He looked at me, his gaze searing right through my soul.
I'm joining this battle.
And Alaska?
Gabriel asked.
I found a replacement.
Gabriel just lifted his brows.
Aunt Fallon, Connor said with a smile. She and Uncle Jeff decided to take a vacation.
Only a shifter would refer to a several thousand mile drive through enemies as a vacation.
I'm here now, he said, and slid his gaze to my father. And I understand you've got a plan.
It took hours to get the CPD team in place, the remaining residents evacuated, and, of course, to get Claudia suitably dressed. When she walked back into my father's office, her hair was gleaming and plaited and crowned with a golden diadem, the scrubs exchanged for a gown of stunning crimson with beading along the scoop neck and long, draping sleeves.
Claudia, my father said, walking to her. You are a vision.
As if the dress had restored her confidence, her acknowledging smile was haughty.
I am a queen, she said. Of course.
Where'd you get the outfit? I whispered to my mother.
Lindsay's been doing cosplay, she said with a grin.
Lindsay was her best vampire friend, and a whiz at reinventing herself. Yoon showed Claudia the park, explained the general plan, then looked back at her.
The CPD team is in place and waiting. The rest of the team will move into place when you can get an invitation to Ruidon.
She slid her gaze to Petra.
May I borrow your hand, Aeromancer?
Petra glanced at Yoon, got his nod, and walked toward her. She pulled off her glove and presented her hand, palm up, to Claudia. Her eyes fixed on Petra's, Claudia put her hand above it, then closed her eyes, murmured something that had magic lifting in the room and sparks crackling between their fingers. Her lips spreading in a smile that had my mother putting a hand on her weapon, Claudia touched a fingertip to Petra's palm. The resulting spark was enough to make even Petra jump.
The message is sent,
Claudia said, opening her eyes again and shifting her gaze back to the rippling grass on the monitor.
We will see if he agrees to play your game.
Transportation was arranged, weapons were checked, and Connor walked to me, his expression unfathomable, and gestured to the hallway.
Can I talk to you?
I nodded and followed him into the hallway, then down the corridor to a quiet spot behind the main stairwell. I wanted to tell him I was glad that he'd stayed, but I didn't think I was ready for that admission.
I brought you something.
As I lifted my brows in surprise, he opened his jacket, fished for something in an interior pocket. He pulled out a toy sword. I stared at it. That's my sword. Why do you have my sword? I narrowed my gaze. How do you have my sword?
I stole it from Cadogan House.
I blinked. You did what?
4 years ago, I snuck into Cadogan House and I took it.
Why would you do that? He lifted a shoulder and grinned in classic teenage Connor style.
I wanted to see if I could.
You are such a punk. But I couldn't help being a little impressed. He might have been reckless, but he was undeniably brave. His grin was wide, confident.
I should get points for bringing it back to you.
Why should you get points for returning something you stole in the first place?
Because I think you need a reminder about who you are.
And who is that? I asked cautiously. He watched me for a minute, as if carefully choosing his words.
You're different, Elisa. You're different than you were, and you're different from the rest of them. You aren't just a vampire, and you aren't just their kid.
No, I'm the monster nobody knows about.
No, he said, and the word was forceful. That's my point. You're thinking about rules and biology and what vampires are supposed to be. They don't apply here, because there's nothing else like you out there. I don't know what happens in your head, he said, moving a step closer, his voice growing deeper with each word. Because you won't let any of us in. But I've seen you fight.
I swallowed hard against the desire to argue, to reject what he was telling me, to shake him off, because that's how I dealt with the monster, by not thinking about it, by pushing it down and away.
Trust a shifter, Elisa. Claws don't make you unclean. They make you strong.
Calling a girl's murderous inner urges one of her strengths isn't going to win you friends.
Are they murderous?
They're violent.
I'm violent.
It's not the same.
Isn't it? It's all magic in some form or other.
We don't have time for this right now, I said, anger and impatience growing. We have to get ready for the fight.
We absolutely have time for this, because we are getting ready for the fight. This is a conversation you need to have. Why did you let it hurt the man who hurt Lulu? Because you wanted it to.
My blood sped, my eyes silvering at the rush of fury. Take it back. Every word was bitter and bitten off.
No, he said, because it's the truth. There may be foreign magic inside of you, Elisa, but there's no foreign magic in control of you. If you gave it control, it's because you wanted it. Stop justifying it and stop overthinking it.
Connor moved a step closer, close enough that our toes nearly touched, and now his voice was a whisper. He put a fingertip beneath my chin, lifted it so our eyes met.
You've been in control for a long time, and you've always had your rules. You've always known the way things are done. Maybe, with Lulu's attacker, it was time to do what you wanted.
The idea made something clench in my abdomen. To hurt people? His eyes were equally kind and fierce.
No, Lise. To save people. to fight because violence had been done against people you cared about. I didn't know what to say about that, or what to feel. The next time you feel the monster, as you call it, the urge to fight, instead of pushing it down or letting it go,